I love that sound, the rhythm of it. It's how you know everyone's doing it right.
What you just heard was the sound of a Rockford icon in the making, Mrs. Fishers. Not the woman herself, we'll get to her in a little bit, but it was the sound of her potato chips, which have been made here in Rockford for nearly 100 years, falling into their fresh bags where they're Vita-sealed and sent to a shelf near you. Well, if you live in Northern Illinois, that is. This is our Under Rocks podcast from WNIJ, where we explore interesting places, people, things here in our region to find out what makes us unique. I'm Spencer Tritt, joined by our Under Rocks team, Susan Stevens, Dan Libman, and Mike Lundgren for this adventure. When I was growing up, we always had a bag of Mrs. Fisher's chips in the house, but it wasn't until much later, and much to my surprise, that I learned the chips are made in Rockford. It turns out Mrs. Fisher's Vice President Chris Spies had a similar experience growing up, and on this month's show, he kindly pulls back the potato chip curtain to show us what goes into making Rockford's favorite snack.
My name is Chris Spies, and I am the Vice President of Mrs. Fisher's.
And how long has Mrs. Fisher's been here?
94 years this year.
That's it.
Almost into the three-digit category.
Wow.
Getting ready to plan for that party when that day comes. It should be pretty good.
So yeah.
I should still be here for that, I hope. But 94 years. One of the oldest chip companies, chippers we call ourselves in the Midwest.
Chippers.
Fully female-owned. The last regional chip company to have that claim here in the Midwest.
So there was a Mrs. Fisher.
Once upon a time, there was, yeah. Eugene and Ethel Fisher started the business, and at some point in time, as they slowly started to grow, Mr. Fisher decided to part ways with his wife or his mistress.
Oh.
And back in those days, it actually was called Mr. Fisher.
Uh-huh.
So when he left, Ethel's friends at the local church that they belonged to said, you know, you should probably rename the business, you know?
Yeah.
And he also left her in a massive amount of debt, $1,000 in debt. So her friends at her church did a fundraiser to help get the $1,000 and get her out of debt, and
right.
Then renamed the business Mrs. Fisher's. And then that's how the name stuck.
Did the mistress have her own snack product as well?
I have a feeling there may have been some collusion there in the snack food industry. And
Funyun.
Yeah, probably.
Mrs.
Yeah, not too fun anymore, yeah. But, yeah, just, you know, one of those weird little things, especially during the Great Depression times, you would have figured that.
That's amazing. So she came back from, because there had to be some sort of stigma against that as well.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Especially during the divorce must have taken place. Mid-30s, so I mean, you just got out of the Great Depression.
Right.
Money's still tight. A nickel is still worth a lot, you know. And to find yourself in $1,000 in debt, I think that's one of those things. To be able to come back from that was remarkable. But, yeah, just carrying on the legacy for 94 years, just doing the same thing, providing just a quality snack food made an old-school way and going up against multi-billion-dollar conglomerates day in, day out.
Note to Mr. Fisher. Guess whose name is lost to history?
Yeah.
Guess who's still here and people are still eating these snacks in the hometown?
That's right. No, I mean, we've been, you know, prospected by other places to relocate and such. And we tell everyone, you know, this is north end of Rockford. This is home. And we have zero desire to relocate to Wisconsin or.
So the original factory was in this spot?
No. So the original factory was on 6th Street and 7th Avenue. Small little. A little spot with a huge window out front, and in those days, I think we've got a photograph somewhere, there used to be four or five ladies sitting in front of this conveyor belt and this water table, hand-peeling potatoes.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we've modernized a little bit, but since that location, we were actually two blocks down to the west here for ample amount of time, and then moved here into the this facility, I think it was the mid-70s when we moved into this building.
Okay.
And then our new fryer, was brand new back in 1978. And that bad boy cost $1 million back then. And they definitely don't make them the way they used to. This thing is just, it's got a lot of history. It's got more history here than everyone combined. But
I want to see it.
Oh, yeah, we'll get some good shots of that one. But, yeah, it produces, I think we process about 2.6 million pounds of potatoes a year. That's all just through that one fryer. So,
and how far do you distribute it?
Our guys go about a 40-mile radius, and then overall, my distribution network's about 150-mile radius. So,
okay.
We make our way down to the Quad Cities just outside of Peoria, majority of Wisconsin, and then we call it quits right at the Chicago suburbs.
And that's a deliberate decision to keep.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Try to keep the regional aspect alive, you know. We're not trying to take over the world like Pinky and the Brain, but just definitely have our little niche in the world, Northern Illinois, Central, and Western Illinois, and that's good enough. You know, we're happy with how that's turning out. So
it's so cool. And as someone who grew up in the area, I'm sure people have told you this before, I didn't even know it was a local thing until I was older. I just thought everyone had Mrs. Fisher's chips, and I feel bad for everyone that doesn't get to grow up with them.
Absolutely. No, growing up as a kid, I thought Fisher's was worldwide, yeah. And I thought every grocery store in the world was called Logley's. you know, I thought Beef Roux was going to be able to be found in California, and then you find out later, it's like your whole life's been a lie. It's just a 40-mile radius. And here it is. So, but no, that's the uniqueness. When you Google regional chip companies and stuff, it's really astonishing to see how many places, a little bit bigger than us, a little bit smaller than us, but how many entities like this really exist. And it's unique because it does show that the little guy still has a fighting chance in this market, and people are definitely more brand loyal now and wanting to hyper focus on locally made products, stuff that isn't being shipped overseas, yeah, stuff that isn't sure. Price gouged to the point where only a stockholder is excited to see that dividend check. You know, we're all trying to survive. Keep the lights on at the house, maybe go on a vacation once or twice a year with the family. You know, just live the American dream aspect of it. So
you can feel like good that you're supporting it while you're enjoying your favorite snack.
Exactly. Yeah. You can watch the Bears, hopefully still in Chicago, watch the game, eat a bag of chips, and, you know, continue on doing our day-to-day.
How many people work here?
Right now, I think we've got about 15 full-timers and then 2 part-timers. So, small little business, nothing too crazy, but, you know, we're a pretty tight-knit family all. You know, we can work together, and then we can play outside of work and still be able to see each other face-to-face come Monday. So, our building itself's only 10,000 square feet. From that, about a third of it is just manufacturing space. Everything else is either finished product storage or raw material storage, but it's our little world, and we just keep chipping away at it.
Great pun.
Now, if you want, we can go back here. It is much, much more quieter. So these totes, all the totes hold about 1,200 pounds of potatoes.
Each
of them, yep.
Holy cow.
And an average truckload for us is just shy of about 50,000 pounds. So,
what kind of potato is it?
Oddly enough, they're called shipping potatoes. They are a unique blend that's specifically designed for potato chip manufacturers. So, maximum yield, just good, consistent, hearty growth inside of it. No hollow hearts, as we call it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is there something about the density of them that makes them better?
Specific
for chips?
Densities are all pretty top priority for the farm. Absolutely.
How's it feel, Dan?
Feels like it's making me hungry. Feels solid.
Feels like it's ready to become a chip.
Feels like it's ready to go into my stomach. How long does it take for this potato before it goes into a bag? And
From start to finish, from the time they start the peeling process to the time it goes into a bag, it takes, at the end of the day, roughly about 24 hours.
Okay.
And the reason why it's so long is because we fry in a shortening-based product. We let the chips sit overnight to completely cure and solidify with that shortening. If we package them too soon, any residual steam that would have been in the product when it's in the bag would stale the bag out, and you'd have a soggy chip.
Yeah.
So, but that's what the claim to fame for us is, you know, it's here in a tote, it's here in a bag on a truck at the grocery stores. You're getting that product. It was made 2 to 3 days ago.
Oh, wow.
You know, quick turnaround. We try to make sure everything everyone's getting is absolutely just fresh. That's one of the niches of being able to be that small company like that. You can control inventory pretty well to make sure you're getting the best of the best.
Where do these come from?
These particular spuds are coming from Plainfield, Wisconsin right now. So I have 2 sources I primarily use. One is in Illinois, and then the other is in Wisconsin. Both states, believe it or not, make a really good potato. And it's funny, the the farmers I deal with are this are the same farmers that are sending chips to Frito-Lay and the Kettle Foods up in Beloit. You know, the truck drivers like, oh, I went to Frito-Lay yesterday. Oh, I went here today, and now I'm seeing you. So it's fun because it's as diversified of an industry as it is. It is pretty close niche. I mean, everyone's buying the same things, the same potatoes, the same oils, but the uniqueness is at the end product. How does that fryer create something that's unique? How does that little extra seasoning blend, that little touch of salt or that touch of garlic powder impact the final product? And, you know, it's, you wind up with 50 different flavors from three companies. So
that's the secret part.
It is. That is. Our R&D team is me and my stomach. So I buy a bag of chips at the grocery store and I say, you know, I had to buy a bag of chips. You know, we should just make the seasoning in-house. So I'll send a competitor's product to the labs and say, can you make something similar to this? And I mean, that's how the cheddar and sour cream came about. I bought another competitor's branded cheddar and sour cream. And I was like, you know, that's good, but it would be better if they had a Mrs. Fisher's label on it. So we created our own blend. And, you know, it's just those little things like that. Things happen out of necessity. If it wasn't for COVID and some of these other unique situations we've ran into in the last couple of years, I don't think most of these unique flavor profiles would even have existed. Just tailoring towards what the market wanted. The market wanted bigger bags, so we gave them bigger bags. The market wanted a spicy chip. The market wanted salt and vinegar chips. And we listened to consumer demands, and now they're satisfied. So
how did COVID, how did accelerate that?
The big thing was folks were, at least in the Rockford market, people were buying in bulk. They didn't want to go out nearly as often. You know, we're, I think a lot of us get used to going to the grocery store once a week, twice a week to get day-to-day things or for dinner. These folks were doing once a week, once every 2 weeks. So they were stocking up. So the shelves would be wiped up and they would just grab literally whatever was on the shelf. And so we said, well, what's missing? And we started paying attention to what flavor profiles were missing and such. And we said, hey, you know what? I think we're missing the market here on some of these unique flavors. They're not our primaries, but a secondary flavor is just as strong and powerful. We created the salt and vinegar, and that was our big push, was that one. And consumers loved it. I mean, there's so many different variants of that out in the market. And, you know, some people, well, I got to have it with the red wine vinegar. Well, the white vinegar flavor is better. And you know what? At the end of the day, the consumer sees it at Walmart. They're happy. I see it in the shopping cart when I'm walking the aisles. It puts a giant smile on my face. Makes me think we kind of know what we're doing. So
can people get all the different flavors in stores, or are there any that you can only get up in your front room here?
So right now, the dark jalapeno is on a limited release here, and the dill pickle right now is limited release only in our factory store off of Fulton Avenue here in Rockford. Everything else can be found at Schnucks, Meijer's, Walmart, Woodman's, Hy-Vee, Jewel Osco, virtually any gas station up and down I-39 from here to Rochelle. And it's always fun. You walk down these aisles, various places, and I guess I'm conditioned to it after 17 years of shipping around things. You see brands, you see trends, you see all these other items on the shelves, and it's always nice when I walk down and I see our brand of product smack dab in the middle of all these titans of our industry, and it's like, oh, all right. Apparently we're having an impact, and you know, it's a humble experience to see it kind of grow on its own natural form.
How did you get into this business?
Ooh, that one was a fun one. I graduated in 2007 from Harlem High School, and I was getting ready to move to Florida for a job working for Philip Morris. And that job fell through as the economy collapsed, and I found myself unemployed and in need of a job. My aunt, who owns this company, was looking for just someone to sweep up crumbs, essentially, off the floors. And I said, hey, if you're hiring, you know, I'd like to throw my name in the contentions for it to have a chance. And she sat down with me, her and my uncle, they both sat down with me and said, hey, we'll give you a shot on one condition. Understand that because you're family, we're going to push you twice as hard. No free passes. You know, it's like the curved grading system. You know, you definitely have to earn your keep here. And so I did. I swept the floors. Those floors looked great. I was happy about it. And then they said, well, you know, we need a picker to pick out some of the rejected chips from the conveyor belts and such.
Sounds like a fun job.
I got yelled at for that because they said, you're you're discarding chips that are perfectly fine just because you're hungry. And I was like, oh.
Is that what happens to the discarded chips? Are you eating most
of
them?
Oh, God, yeah. No, this physique has been honed in for years of chip eating and being, ready for this one, a couch potato. Oh, my gosh. Ooh. Yeah, that's, but no, they gave me the shot, and I had to prove myself. And then from that point on, they said, well, you know, we need someone to run the packaging machines. And so I again said, hey, I'll give it a shot. And it was nice, you know, little did I know that they were actually testing me to see my endurance, see how I would react towards stressful situations or under pressure. And what they were really looking for ultimately was someone who they could believe in and follow in to be able to carry on the legacy. There's a little unknown history in terms of ownership of this company. Every owner has been an existing employee. It does, you know, the Fisher family was the only family to have it once, and then after that, it was employees. So it's always been a tradition for 94 years. When it comes time to sell, you sell to an existing employee. Mindset being from sweeping floors to signing paychecks, you should know what to do. You should know how to handle situations, yeah. For good or for bad. You know, there's certain days I miss grabbing a broom and sweeping. It's a lot less stress, yeah. But
this has to feel better than Philip Morris.
It does. It does. Yeah. Selling cigarettes to kids, probably not the best thing in the world to have. But yeah. Selling chips to kids, I don't mind doing that. I could do that. So, just unique little situations like that. Never thought I'd see myself in a position to be leading the team like this. And it's humbling. It's nice to know that someone believed in you. And you know, now we try to impose that with our staff here, and just, you know, try to empower them to take on more, take on a challenge. Before you raise your hand and ask for help, say, hey, what other critical thinking skills can I do to try to figure out this current issue? You know, nothing's the point where you have to just call it quits and walk away from it. Everything's got a solution. It's just time management. Just figure out the problem and figure out how to solve it. So we try to really push, especially the younger generation that we've hired in, just show them and say, you know, these are things that you can't just do on a computer. You've got to do some mechanical things and, you know, just process it every day. And if you learn something new every day, that's the biggest thing. That's what we try and tell our guys and try and teach my kids that. And I still, even doing this for this many years, I learn something new every single day. And if I don't, I honestly get pretty upset about it, because it means I wasn't doing my job good enough to educate myself to better myself.
Does your aunt still own it?
Yep, aunt still owns it. She's here. She is semi-retired. I think she enjoys coming in knowing that she can come in and... she knows the ship's going to still sail on course, and she can kind of sit back as more of a passenger now. And, you know, it's taken this far, but there's still knowledge to learn about this business. She still manages to show me one or two things that didn't think of or was doing it in an inefficient way. And she says, hey, I've been doing this for 45 years. Try it this way. And just, you know, again, just evolving. Always just trying to learn, take on something new every day. That's the biggest part of it, so...
I'm curious about something you said before. What does a chip have to look like to get rejected?
When I was on the job, it was whatever my stomach wanted to have for lunch. But everyone else, it's a chip that maybe has a really dark, nasty color to it, or a line of green. It depends how
ripe. Those are the best ones.
Yeah, that's
yeah. So some folks want those.
A big like glob of chips stuck together, and that's a home run. When you reach in, you're like, oh, there's four together.
We have a special machine called the Cluster Buster. Its job is to break those up.
Oh, but, man.
Those are actually some of the best ones where you get some of the grease pockets in there. And
yes.
Yeah, I tell everyone, if you're going to do something like that, just make sure you don't have like a physical the next day, because the amount of salt and everything.
Separate like the cluster bomb.
That's not a bad idea. Replace the popcorn balls you used to get at all the Apple Orchards. Right. Just have the cluster of chips. Yeah.
That's a great idea. And I think a t-shirt, the Cluster Buster, might be a nice souvenir.
It's an actual machine?
It's these little fingers inside of the fryer that run at higher rates of speed to just kind of hit anything that's not in a flat level.
So the Cluster Buster is a great name, but we heard you also have a machine called the Spudnik.
Oh yes, that is what we use to unload the potatoes. This bad boy is from 1962 or 63. Farm grade equipment will last longer than I'll be alive. Its one job is to drive into a semi and unload potatoes. And we just put on a new upholstered leather seat too, so it's very comfortable for the operators now. But it moves at 1 mile an hour. It takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours to unload the potatoes. But when we get the potatoes in, it's in a 53-foot reefer trailer. And, I mean, it's filled chest high the whole length of the trailer. So all the potatoes are loose. So all of our machinery we have is what transports it into these totes. So it's quite a fun process to see that in action.
I'm asking for secrets here, but the next big flavor.
Ooh, the next flavor is going to be Mrs. Fisher Fire. We're going to finally come out with a hot, spicy chip. The world has been yelling at us for several years for it.
Yeah.
I don't think we had enough volunteers to do a lot of the first rounds of testing because a lot of us are weak when it comes to spice. But
is that something we can sign up to do?
Oh, yeah. You got to sign the waiver, but yeah, absolutely. You sign that waiver, any tester's able to give it a shot. But
I'll be the guinea pigs for sure.
Yeah, we're slowly working with a big national manufacturer that makes a good quality spice. I won't say their name just quite yet, but they're working with us. We're trying to develop a unique blend to create the Mrs. Fisher Fire. So that's what our focus is on for 2026, 2027.
We all know that one of the greatest things about Mrs. Fisher's chips too is the logo. What can you tell us about the logo? And it's been the same for almost 100 years?
Untouched. So again, when it was called Mr. Fisher's, if you ever look at the logo closely enough, you'll notice that the potato is a very masculine looking.
Yeah. Got a little dour expression.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Just like him, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, I think now in his grave even he looks like that too. But it's a masculine potato with the dancing children to just kind of celebrate the potato. A crazy thing back in the 40s, especially, everyone thought that by eating potatoes and eating them with the skin on, there was a higher nutritional level. It was a healthier product to eat. Food science wasn't nearly as advanced as it is now. Now we know that doesn't matter with skin on or skin off, you're still getting the same nutrients out of it. But they were dead set on believing that eating it with the skin on was a better way of eating, and it was healthy for you. Potatoes are healthy, absolutely. Just when it's deep fried, it becomes a healthy indulgence and a healthy snack, for a long day. But yeah, the logo never was altered from its original design. I think it was copyrighted back in 1929 or 1930, something around that. And then, officially registered in 32. But it's something that we've talked about updating. And when you see all these places like Cracker Barrel and it backfires, and that right there just tells us if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. Okay, since we're radio, would you describe the logo for our listeners?
So the logo for Mrs. Fisher's is a two outer rings, and inside of that ring is a giant potato with two skinny arms and two little legs and some unique facial expressions and a horribly drawn top hat. two stick figured style children dancing kind of in a circle, celebrating. And the term underneath of the children, it says Vita Sealed, which relates back to science and the nutrients back in the 40s, where they felt that by leaving the peels on and cooking them and frying them, that the vitamins were sealed in the chip. Part of the trademark, we left it on there. The spelling for sealed is different than what it's traditionally spelt as, but that's the registered trademark. We're not changing it.
Okay. And we can't contest it. I don't know. Who knows what Vita is? So, there. Good.
Modern science has no idea anymore, but it looks good, so we kept it on there.
Has there ever been a mascot, like a mascot costume?
Ooh. I dressed up as a potato. It was a god-awful $12 purchase on Amazon of a legitimate potato, and I walked around with a radio personality gentleman here for one of our hot bag sales for Thanksgiving last year. I ordered an extra large. They sent me an extra small. That was exciting. Other than that, we said, let's just let the logo do all the talking, because I can't pay anyone enough to walk down Fulton Avenue or North Main Street dressed as a potato and say, stop on down. So,
especially a skin-tight potato. With a top hat.
Yeah, can we get a closer look at some of the... I'd love to see this conveyor belt of chips that we saw as we came in.
Absolutely.
All right, so just to describe what we're looking at here, conveyor belts of chips everywhere. Yep. What's going on at this station?
So at this point here, the chips have already been cooked and seasoned, and now they're just gently going up this nice food-grade rubber-style conveyor belt, going into our two-story hopper system where the chips are going to sit overnight to cool down and cure so we can get ready to package them first thing in the morning. At this point here, this is where one of the quality control testers is stationed to kind of look for the any sort of rejected product that wouldn't look passable for a Mrs. Fisher's chip. And then they have the choice. They get to eat it later on or discard it.
So this was your old job?
Oh, yes. Many hours on a stool sitting here looking at chips for days on end. But I do miss it.
Yeah, I haven't seen any bad ones yet. Looking good.
That's right. That's Good Farms making good product for us. So kind of put me out of a job in that regards.
Oh, yeah. What's going on here? So these are like extra
shavings. These are the crunchies. So one of the little history things that we've done here is we collect all the small broken pieces. That was always a part of our history. Ethel Fisher used to sell these small bags of crunchies for one penny. And all the kids up and down 6th Street and 7th Avenue would come in there. They would buy a bag of crunchies for a penny, and they'd buy a Coke for a nickel.
Wow.
And then they would go to the 10th Avenue pool, and they'd spend their summer days just sitting out there, sunbathing, eating the broken pieces of chips and drinking a Coca-Cola. Yeah.
Is that salting it?
That is, yes. Yeah. So what we're looking at here is our beloved waterfall of salt. A fun fact for you that we're the one of the only places that does this. We only salt one side of the potato chip in production. By the time that the chips toss and turn on all the conveyors, that's what mixes and incorporates all that salt mixture onto all parts of the chip. But it just, yeah, starts off life with one fine layer of salt right on top of it.
I mean, it's all in the bag. It's getting mixed together anyway.
Absolutely. So it's a super fine sea salt product, very small micro. So when you pick it up with your hand, it literally will fall through the cracks of your fingers. It's almost like a powder, if you will, but it's the best application that we find with our type of oils that we fry in for adhesion and coverage. Certain kind of salts, if I use a more coarse kosher salt and such, it will not stick to our chip. So that took a fair amount of years to figure out what was the best combination to use for that.
This is too cool.
You know, like at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, some of the TV stations will show like the East State Street and Perryville cameras. I thought about putting a live feed footage right here and just on a loop, you know.
You totally should.
Can't sleep at 3 o'clock, turn on the Fisher TV, and boom, there it is. You know?
Like how they had it on that bird downtown in the nest. You could have just a live stream of this.
So that is the actual fryer. So what's happening is all the chips are being dipped right into the oil. These little finger prods are just popping them up and down, and there's a current that's pulling the oil. So all the chips are slowly advancing forward. From the time a potato slice hits the back end of this fryer to the time it's seasoned, it's roughly anywhere between 7 to 10 minutes, depending on the variety of the potato.
Oh, I see.
So this process, it's an old process. It's, by today's standards, it's an inefficient process, but you know, you never get rid of your grandmother's cast iron skillet, right? You always keep it and you protect it because that is what is packs the flavor in. And this kettle, like I said, is built from the late 70s. We have no intentions of upgrading or getting rid of this and putting in a brand new one. This is what makes Mrs. Fisher's that standout chip in the market.
How often are you at your desk over there and you're just like, I'm just going to get up and get a chip?
Oh, I try to make sure every hour I get up and stretch my legs.
Quality control.
With a Dixie cup in my hand.
At what point of the process do you take your chip from?
Ooh. This transfer conveyor right over here, right before it hits this white conveyor belt.
Right, that's where you get your chip?
That's where I get my chip, and that's where we fill up all the bags when we have our hot bag sales. My team stands over that conveyor belt, filling bags manually. We'll have about 700 cars show up for an event like that. We do a drive-through method, so you pull up in the parking lot, you say, I want 10 hot bags, and my team's there filling up every bag by hand, and you get a fresh bag of chips. It's in a brown paper sack. old school, and you know, you can see all the grease being absorbed into the brown bag. But
how often do you guys do that? Is that a yearly thing?
No, I do that usually once a month, once every other month. It just depends on time of season. Now, we just had one for St. Paddy's Day. That was great. We teamed up with Sugar Jones Bakery, and they make us the Mrs. Fisher's Kitchen Sink cookies, potato chips in there, pretzels, chocolate, toffee. I mean, so.
Is that information on your website when you're doing those?
Facebook. Facebook's the biggest source. The website's there for folks who want to order online. We have a lot of former Rockfordians that have moved away for whatever reasons, and they want to taste it back home. So the website's more or less designed to satisfy that urge and want for Mrs. Fisher's. Facebook's the best thing to see the day-to-day. And that's how we do all of our media.
I think it's really inspiring, actually, you know, that this has been around for almost 100 years.
Yeah.
That it's local. It's like everything that you should want. And, you know, the product's good.
Yeah.
I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. I never heard of them until I got here, but I couldn't believe they were made here.
Do you remember, like, the first time you had one or saw the bag? Were you like, what's this?
I do. I remember vaguely, like, wondering why I'd never seen this before, and I didn't realize it was just a local thing.
So all of these chips were cooked yesterday. We're packaging them today. They're coming out of the hopper and into our conveying systems. The chips are being vibrated down onto a conveyor belt. They're going to go up to the top of our mezzanine system, our two-story system. The system vibrates and the chips drop into the buckets. All the buckets communicate and say, hey, buckets 1, 13, and 11 combined, you make whatever the target weight is, release. And if you look carefully, you'll see the chips fall in between where the scale ends and the packaging machine starts.
It looks like a giant funnel.
Yep, that's what it is. It's a giant tube at a 60-degree angle because that's the optimum amount for our chips to drop at a free fall without spiraling in a circle.
Wow, that's some engineering right there.
Somebody better than us spent a lot of time in college to figure that out, and I stole it from them using Google. So.
Wow. Let's take a look at some of the finished bags coming out here.
So right now they're making our giant pound-and-a-half bag. I do believe these ones are going to Sam's Club tomorrow morning. So I'll grab a bag here real quick.
They're going to Sam's Club.
Oh, man. Yeah, those are big.
These are the biggest bag you have,
I think,
right?
This is the big boy. Yep, a pound and a half. Everyone else is usually selling a 22-ounce or more commonly a 13.5-ounce. This is one of the oldest bags in the bag design. One of the oldest ones that we've had. We've never altered it. It's the classic Mr. Fisher with his little top hat and the dancing children and such. But this is the signature bag, what we're known for, you know. I love that sound, the rhythm of it. It's how you know everyone's doing it right.
You guys run daily, weekly batches then to do the dark chips one day or another week,
any,
and then the seasoned chips? Or?
Any flavored chip, any unique style other than classic is usually once or twice a week, depending on the demand. Every day we always cook the classic chips just because that always is going to outsell and outperform all the other profiles. But yeah, this is a Monday through Friday operation. One big thing that we're heavy on here, I want everyone in this company to have a full 48 hours off. So unless it is an act of God or I found volunteers, we do not work Saturdays or Sundays. I want you to spend that time, be with your family, be with your kids, go paint the house before you get yelled at by your significant other. Whatever it may be.
Bring some chips to a party.
Absolutely. It's always better to be the chip person than the beer person for any party.
Hold
so.
On, I'm writing that down.
I think it's going to be on my headstone, my wife said. We call our customer base Fisher fans. They're truly diehards. They support us, and every time I do a hot bag sale or I put a post out on Facebook, it's always astonishing to see the amount of interaction and how our customers answer questions that the unknown folks who don't know about the brand are raising on social media. And before I even get a chance to answer them, you know, what's a dark chip? I'll read the comments. There's seven other comments from Fisher fans explaining it verbatim what I would have said. Wow. And it's a unique thing. You know, I'm humbled by it. There's not too many brands in this world that I would be devoted for if it was a pair of shoes or, you know, but for Mrs. Fisher's, we really have a unique brand that just, the customer base is just fantastic. I couldn't ask for a better group of people to
consume our product, so.
And so this is the one that people can only get in the store here, and we should mention there's nothing on this bag. It feels like I'm getting a secret bag of chips here. It's just a silver bag that says dark jalapeno.
Incognito. That's, yeah. And anyone in Rockford who's been to the factory store, you know, if you know, you know. That silver bag or that brown paper bag. Any other place you walk out of in the city, you're probably going to get arrested for that. But they see you walking out of here, and you may even get a police escort back home.
So from my husband is a fan of the popcorn. Oh, there it is. He was like, is there a Rockford mix, like a Chicago mix of popcorn?
Our triple mix is one of them. And then in the red bags there is our cheesy caramel corn. That's caramel corn and cheese popcorn blended together on one kernel. And that one there is...
That is efficient.
Yeah, it saves you multiple purchases.
We should mention, too, you guys have refillable buckets here, up to 5 pounds, is that?
Oh, yeah. Yep, so the buckets has been something that we've been doing for 40-plus years. The amount of buckets that I've had to order in my 17 years here, it's insane. It's got to be hundreds of thousands of buckets, but the 5-pound bucket's the most common. I mean, how cool is it to show up to a party with a giant pail full of chips? You know, and again, it's always better to be the chip person than the beer person. You know, there's a few customers that have some of the first edition buckets, and it's these Fisher followers that are now in their late 80s, and they have these buckets, and they're the worst structural design bucket. They're held on by tape, but it's just a great piece of history, and I think, honestly...
You're gonna be buried with them.
Exactly. No, I mean, we've had some folks...
Put my ashes in the bucket.
Actually, we had a sad story, but it's a funny story. This lady came in a couple of years ago, and she gave us this framed picture. And I looked at it, and it's two wax bags from back in the early 50s that were presented nicely in this little shadow box. And she goes, I want you to have this. My husband and I are getting a divorce, and he thinks he's getting this, but I'm not giving it to him. I want you to have it. So now it's under lock and key because I don't know who he is, and if he's listening, I'm sorry. But yeah, I mean, just
divorce has worked its way through the Mrs. Fisher story.
Not too bad.
All the way.
It's not too bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, just a lot of history in such a small little place in Rockford. You know, I mean, compared, you know, Atwood and Ingersoll families had all their operating machineries all around here and stuff, and they've long since been gone. And just Fisher's is one of the oldest entities in Rockford now. So. Yeah.
Have you talked to anyone who knew Mrs. Fisher?
Yes, so her granddaughter comes in quite frequently. Oh. And yeah, they have some unique pictures and stuff of some of the original equipment and such. What they, you know, like you said, in the beginning, they were peeling potatoes, I mean, by hand. Five ladies sitting around in a little wash tank and just peeling away. So, I mean, it's fun to see the evolution of how it started to where it is now and all the intervals that comprise that little bit for the operation.
Have you ever heard what she was like?
I'm sure she had to be a saint to be with Mr. Fisher for all those years. But you know, she was a smart woman. She knew that she had something going on that had fantastic potential for something great, and it's a multi-generational chip. And I think that honestly, a lot of it has to stem to do with her beliefs of creating something unique, local, and affordable. And that's kind of what we carry on with our traditions today and all those values. I try to really ensure that we're giving the customers the best of what we can do. So, you know, we try to really work with local places. I mean, I love cross-branding. We do a lot of stuff with the Wired Cafe, By the Dozen Bakery, and Sugar Jones. You know, they make us, By the Dozen Bakery puts our Fisher's chips crushed on top of Long John donuts. Those are delicious. Wired Cafe makes these caffeinated brownies with Mrs. Fisher's and caramel drizzle on top of them. Sugar Jones does this kitchen sink cookie with chunks of Mrs. Fisher's scattered throughout all of it. These are people who, you know, just Everyday Joe. You know, that's who we like to work with. And I think that's what kind of helps us achieve greatness in this market, is just because we're all average Joes. You know, you can see us down at a bar having a beer on a Friday night or out to dinner with the missus and scream out, hey, that's that Fisher dude.
All right, we're outside. Mike here has his buckets of chips.
5 pounds.
Sue has about 6 bags. I got a sweater.
A bags of bags.
And Dan got some dark jalapeno.
Dark jalapeno in the silver secret bag.
Yeah. That was a great moments in life. That's got to be in the top 10, I think. The tour of Mrs. Fisher.
And Mike and I were talking, you know, I thought it was going to be overpoweringly oily in there. Yeah. It really wasn't. It was sort of like a day spa kind of. You know,
I wore a raincoat just in case.
Fine.
I have to say, guys, this is quite possibly one of the happiest days of my life. Touring a potato chip factory with some great people.
Crispies, wonderful.
Crispy, yeah, it was great. Very smart, informative. And
I would say we all are proud of Rockford.
Yeah.
For, you know, 93 years.
That's really cool. Yeah, you don't have to go big, and you just, like, do what you do.
That's it.
And then just keep doing it for 100 years. That's all you got to do.
That's it?
That's it.
All right.
Oh, well, a chip hot off the press, absolutely delicious and better than I expected.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah, come get your hot bags or stop by a store anywhere by you. Or you can come right here into the front door and get chips straight from the source. Fulton and Fremont in Rockford.
That was a lot of people just coming in the whole time. This is just like a Thursday morning and steady stream of people coming in, getting a couple chips. If I live nearby... dangerous. I probably work here.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I was going to ask if they were hiring.
All right. Well, I don't know if we should do another show after this. Is this like the greatest under
this is the pinnacle.
When I run out of chips, we'll do another one here again.
Okay. Well, we got some exciting things in the works right now, so we'll find out more.
We're going actually under the rocks, but not right now. Right now I'm going into the bag.
Do. And if you have ideas for what we should explore next, send us an email, rocks@niu.edu.
What should we
eat next?
What do we eat?